Welcome to the Sustainable Nano Podcast. I'm Miriam Kraus, and today's episode is all about antibacterial soaps. That may not sound like it has anything to do with the Center for Sustainable Nanotechnology at first, and it's not really about nanotechnology, but it is a lot about sustainability. And this is a pretty timely episode because, as you may have heard, back in early September, the federal government actually banned the use of triclosan and a number of other antibacterial substances in hand soaps. And then just last week at the UN General Assembly, they brought up this topic of antibiotic-resistant bacteria and the importance of understanding, you know, the overuse of certain kinds of antibiotic materials. So, quoting from the New York Times, it says, heads of state agreed to develop national action plans to help shore up the effectiveness of the life-saving drugs in animals and people. So our conversation today is with Eric Melby, who is a postdoctoral researcher here in the Center for Sustainable Nanotechnology. And actually, it turns out 2 years ago, he wrote a blog post for the Sustainable Nano blog all about triclosan. So it seemed like a good time to revisit this topic since it's in the news. Here's our interview. Thank you very much for agreeing to talk to me today for the podcast. Do you want to introduce yourself briefly?
My name is Eric Melby. I'm a postdoctoral research associate at the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory. I work in the lab of Dr. Galia Orr. And previous to that, I was also doing research within the Center for Sustainable Nanotechnology with Dr. Joel Peterson at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And I finished my PhD about 2 weeks ago. Yay.
Yay.
So my research previously with Dr. Peterson was related to using model biomembranes to study how nanoparticles might interact with the membranes of organisms, but these are membranes that are produced in the laboratory, so basically a chemically synthesized membrane, not a true membrane of a bacteria or an animal of some sort. And now my research with Dr. Orr relates to the use of different cell lines to understand how nanoparticles coming into contact with whole cells might impact the function of those cells, how they might be taken up by the cells, how they might change how the cell behaves and ultimately become toxic to the cells. My interest in triclosan, this story, is because I've been very interested in environmental chemistry. So my PhD was in environmental chemistry, and I've always really been interested in chemicals of concern to the environment and to humans and animals, plants, etc. I'm pretty fascinated with, you know, anthropogenic, so human-made things, and how what we put into the environment might have a positive or a negative effect in this case.
Great. So yeah, I asked you to talk with us for the podcast because way back last winter, actually, you had written a post for our blog about triclosan, which is an antibacterial chemical. And recently in the news, we found out that the federal government has actually instituted a ban of triclosan and some other things. So I wanted to ask for your kind of thoughts on that and to fill us in a little bit on the story. So I was hoping maybe we can start way back. And
yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about just what is antibacterial or antibiotic? What does that even mean?
Yeah.
And what are the different categories of those things?
Absolutely. So I think my blog post has some of that information. I looked back on it recently and saw that it was actually from 2 years ago. So time flies, apparently.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So something that's antibacterial is going to obviously kill bacteria, and ideally we're trying to kill those bacteria that might be harmful to us. And there's a couple different types of antibiotics, some that are non-specific, meaning that they will wipe out bacteria in a very generic way. So it could be something like dissolving their outer membranes. And so if that happens, it's a non-specific antibiotic. But there's also specific antibiotics which might target a particular receptor, particular protein on the bacteria. And in those cases, it's really easy for a bacteria to develop resistance because they might, they might figure out how to change the expression of that protein. Maybe they can find a way to not use it. And you know, this is not really intentional. It's kind of by accident. It's a matter of evolution, so to speak. They might be able to find a way around using that particular protein, which the antibiotic hinders and causes the bacteria to die. And if that happens, that bacteria would now be resistant to the antibiotic agent. And that could be a problem because it could cause other antibiotics to become less effective against these bacteria as well, ones that we rely on quite heavily in medicine, particularly.
So can you give a couple examples of non-specific, those antibacterial things that will just kill everything? It doesn't matter if they, what kind of mechanism it uses.
Yeah, so a lot of those hand sanitizers that we use when we don't have water have ethyl alcohol, ethanol. And those are basically just dissolve the membranes of these bacteria, and that causes them to die. Isopropyl alcohol is another one that you probably remember, you know, growing up, you put it on cuts. Same thing with hydrogen peroxide. These are things that work in a very wide paintbrush sort of way. They're not targeting one specific protein or one specific area of the bacteria. They're really affecting it in a large way to cause that bacteria to die. And those are less of a concern because it's hard to develop any sort of resistance because the membrane components that are there that are being affected pretty much need to be there.
So why do we need any specific antibacterial? Can't we just use ethyl alcohol for everything?
Yeah, that's a good question, right? But there are some applications where we couldn't just ingest ethanol to destroy bacteria that may be found within our bodies. Some people like to ingest ethanol. But in those cases, when we have bacteria that's maybe growing, let's say you had some cut, you've got some internal infection, certain agents aren't able to get at the bacteria that are within those areas. And so ethanol would be one of those, isopropyl alcohol. We can't apply those to every particular area of our bodies. And so that's why we use antibiotics like penicillin, which was discovered quite a while ago, to be able to access some of those places that non-specific antibacterial agents cannot.
Great. So you mentioned in your blog post was all about this particular thing, triclosan. And one of the things you had talked about was how, as of 2 years ago, it was already kind of problematic. It had been banned in Minnesota. And one of the issues was that it had been found in like a lot of streams and soils and in, in urine of whatever large percentage of people who were tested.
Yeah, I think it was 75% of people in a study in 2003. And I know that since 2003, the use had become more widespread.
And to be clear, these are people who are not taking antibiotics. It's just in the general population, right?
Just in the general population. I think it was like 2,000 people in the study, something like that. So it was a pretty large number.
So, so my question is, why is that a problem? Why do we not want a substance like triclosan to be just kind of everywhere?
Yeah, accumulating in, you highlighted two important things. It's accumulating in the environment. We see it in soils and we see it in water. They've done soil cores and sediment cores where you can basically look at a lake over time in the sediment cores. So you can basically say, from, this section is coming from 1960, you go up a little higher and that's from 1970, 1980, and so on. And they found triclosan from a long, long time back. I think, starting maybe in the somewhere between the 50s and 70s. So a long time ago.
Ancient history.
I wouldn't go that far. But that is a problem. We have a lot of bacteria that are living in the soils, in the sediment and in soils. And so if there is a fairly large concentration of triclosan there, it is possible that those bacteria can develop a resistance to triclosan, number one, but then that might enhance their resistance to other drugs, other antibiotics. If it's just in the water column in general, it could have the same effect. It was also found to be toxic to fish at certain concentrations, higher concentrations than what is typically found in the environment, but we might have some effect on organisms going beyond that. The other thing that's interesting about triclosan, so it's very persistent, meaning it doesn't really break down. Some things that get released into the environment break down because bacteria will consume them and chew them up into other things. Triclosan doesn't, but the shape of the triclosan molecule is somewhat similar to some of the hormones that are in bodies, both human and other animals. So it can be a problem on top of that, kind of going back to the studies of triclosan being in urine and blood of human beings, in that it can it can almost act as a endocrine disruptor. So it almost looks like a hormone. So if there's particular receptors for a hormone, maybe triclosan would block that. And I think there has been evidence for that published. So that's another big problem with it.
Cool. That makes sense. So then looking more broadly, can you talk a little bit about what's the deal with this new federal ban? Does it, what does it cover? What changes will happen because of it?
Yeah, so as far as I understand, the current federal ban only is for triclosan found in hand soap. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of other products, actually, that triclosan is found in. One thing that I find very interesting is that certain brands of toothpaste will have triclosan, and that's not covered by the ban. And so I dug into that a little bit more to understand why people put triclosan, why some companies, not all companies. So I would suggest if you use toothpaste, you maybe take a look at the label, because it would be clearly written on there whether or not it has triclosan on the back. But I found that triclosan is really effective against the gum disease gingivitis. And so people who suffer from gingivitis, it would, you know, it might be a good idea to use, but that's not a really big problem for most of the population. And if you go to the dentist every 6 months or a year, like you're supposed to, your dentist would tell you whether or not you have gingivitis. And so I think if you don't need this product in your life, I would really try and avoid it, because the ban is good. It goes a long ways. It is going to ban all uses in hand soaps. And I think they're considering other things now, but it doesn't ban everything. And so I think we need to consider that as consumers. Are the downfalls of using this product worth the benefits that it might provide? And that's something that we have to think about a lot with a lot of different products beyond antibiotics.
Mm-hmm. That makes perfect sense. Yeah, so you just had one good recommendation for what you think listeners can do, which is to like take a look at ingredients in your toothpaste, for example. There other things that triclosan now is banned from hand soaps? Are we done? Are we good? We don't have to worry about it anymore? Or what comes next?
Well, I think I kind of pointed to that further studies are going on to see whether or not it should still be included in the other products that aren't covered by this ban. And so that's, you know, that's something we should continue to pay attention to. And like I said, consider whether or not you really need it in your life or not. I think maybe in general, it highlights our need as consumers. I would recommend that we try to pay attention more to the things that are in the products that we're using. I think a lot of times we take that for granted. We know we like this brand, we pick it up off the shelf, we put it in our cart, we buy it, and we don't really consider any of the effects that it could have, you know, everyday products like toothpaste and hand soap, what it could mean for in a much broader context for the environment and for our own health.
Yep. So that's great. So then coming kind of right back around to when we were starting to talk at the beginning, you know, for people who are, they just want to be, make sure that they're clean and hygienic and killing bad bacteria on their hands or whatever, what's the most effective way to do that?
Yeah, there was, there's been, I think, a few studies that compared the use of hand soaps that were didn't contain antibiotics to those that contained triclosan and I think maybe some other antibacterial agents. And it found that in terms of infectious disease, there was no difference between using just regular soap and water versus using soap that had triclosan or other antibacterial agents in it and water. So really that right there tells us that if we're just doing a good job of washing our hands with soap, the whole purpose is not to kill all those bacteria. It's just to wash them off our hands. And if they're off our hands, then we're clean of them and we can continue on our daily lives. I would never recommend to not wash your hands, period. And if you're just doing a good job of washing your hands, then really these antibacterial agents, they don't really have much use in that application. There are other applications that I think are useful, but that would not be one of them.
So yeah, so that, you know, makes the important distinction between this is why the ban is for hand soaps and not for, you know, it's not just a blanket ban of all uses of these products.
Yes.
Cool. So is there anything else you think we should talk about for this topic?
One thing I found interesting is that there's a lot of research right now about our gut microbiome and all the bacteria that are inside of us and, you know, some insane number of bacteria that make up our bodies. and are very useful and helpful, and we want them to be there. And if they're not there, that can have serious negative consequences. So right now, there's researchers who are linking all sorts of problems that people might have to the composition of the gut microbiome. So I think things like heart disease and even some brain function is attributed to the bacteria that are inside of us, not to mention all the positive things they do in terms of breaking down food and making nutrients more accessible to us. But things like allergies and these different diseases that people might have in the GI tract and even beyond that, and we could really be changing what those populations look like inside of ourselves by having chemicals like triclosan inside of us. So it's another good reason to just try and avoid it, because there's a reason why those things are there. And if we're putting in an agent that can be toxic to them, we might really be shifting those populations in potentially a negative way that could have really serious consequences.
I'm really glad you brought that up. Yeah, that's a really important point to make. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, well, I guess I was going to say how this story of triclosan, researchers, you know, the Minnesota ban happened 2 years ago, and researchers have been looking at triclosan and its effects for quite a long time. So it just shows you how a product that is being used, there's evidence that maybe there are some issues with that product, how it could cause widespread problems to humans, to the broader environment. How long it takes for that body of evidence to accumulate, number one, and then how long it takes when we have the evidence to try and change the policies that are in place, the laws that are in place. So there is this really good connection between science and then ultimately the laws and the broader society. But it would be nice if we could shorten that distance in time, right? You know, how do we make that connection faster? And I think another thing that this really parallels well with is our work in the center, right, where we have something, these nanomaterials that we're using, and the use of these nanomaterials is just ramping up really quickly. And we're hopefully on the beginning end of their use so that we can see what might cause some nanomaterials to be toxic, what causes other nanomaterials to be non-toxic, and hopefully shift the way that these nanomaterials are used in a way that will benefit society, number one, but then number two, not have negative downstream effects. And hopefully that's something that we can do within the Center for Sustainable Nanotechnology.
Well said. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you for putting these together. I've only had a chance so far to listen to the first one, but it's awesome. So
cool.
Great job to you.
Thank you. Absolutely. All right, that's it for this episode of the Sustainable Nano Podcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks very much, of course, to Eric Melby for doing the interview for this week's episode. We've got more podcast episodes that you can find at sustainable-nano.com/podcast. Or, of course, you can subscribe on iTunes. And as of yesterday, we are also now on Stitcher. And if you like the podcast, do please consider leaving a review for us. It'll help other people find the podcast. While you're waiting for the next episode to come up, you can check out our blog at sustainable-nano.com. There's a ton of posts that are mostly written by graduate students from the Center for Sustainable Nanotechnology on a huge range of topics all around sustainability, nanotechnology, and life in science. You can find us on social media. We are on Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest, all at Sustainable Nano. Our podcast is produced by the Center for Sustainable Nanotechnology, which is funded by a grant from the U.S. National Science Foundation. So thank you very much to the NSF for our funding. But of course, we have our usual disclaimer. All of the opinions and comments that you hear on this podcast are those of the speakers, of course, and not necessarily reflecting the views of the National Science Foundation. Thanks very much for listening, and stay tuned for our next episode coming in just a couple of weeks.